What's your favorite Krishna book story, birthday boy?
One of them.
Which one?
One of them.
All of them, that was. All of them. All of them.
I love
what's your favorite one? Govardhan Leela, right? Govardhan Leela.
I know.
Something to do with fights, right? Like when Krishna married Rukmini, there was a big fight, right? Boys always like the battle scenes.
I like more fight books.
Yeah, I thought so.
Krishna fight past dance?
Yeah, okay.
It comes on.
Well, we just heard Krishna killed Aristasura. Aristasura. No. Huh? Agasura. Not Agasura. This is chapter 36. No, excuse me. Excuse me. He's going to kill Agasura. Agha. Agha means sin. He's a very sinful asura. Agha, asura. So, yesterday, Friday evening, we had a question that didn't have an answer. So I spent some time, found the answer. Would you like to know the answer to this question? Shh. The first demon that was killed by Krishna and the first demon that was killed by Lord Ramachandra was a woman, female. Is there some significance to that? So, about a year ago, I had asked scholars here and there, and nobody had heard anything. And then I came across somebody that had the answer. The devotee is Hari Parshad from somewhere, Maharashtra, I believe. And he's a disciple of Radha Govinda Maharaj, and he's a Sanskrit scholar. And he's gotten sanction from Radha Govinda Maharaj to translate Hari Shuri's translation and commentary on Canto 10. And so this is Hari Shuri's commentary offers the following explanation. The first obstacle that any sadhaka comes across in his spiritual life is his desires, asha, for material objects, association with the opposite gender, etc. This term, asha, is feminine in gender. Since it is a feminine entity and is the root of all other anarthas in spiritual life, for this reason the destruction of this inauspicious feminine entity is needed at the very beginning. So when I heard this, I was questioning, who is this person? I never heard of him before. So with the help of Hari Parshad, there's skipping the detail. His commentary is valid without all the detail. So it's, one day it'll be published from Sanskrit to English, probably Sanskrit to Hindi to English, because he speaks all three. And he's a good scholar. So, asha, desire for material objects, is the first obstacle and the root of all other anarthas. The word, we're familiar with the word asha from Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the verse in Bhagavad Gita? Moga asha, moga karma no. Anybody know the verse? Moga jnana vicheta saha rakshasim asarim chaiva prakritim mohinim shita. chapter 9, text number 12, Bhagavad Gita. Those who are thus bewildered and attracted by demonic and atheistic views in that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, asha. It just says asha, and it's Prabhupada has translated their hopes for liberation, moga karmano, their hopes for fruitive activities, moga jnana, their culture of knowledge, are all defeated. So now we're going to continue. We heard yesterday both Jiva Goswami and Sanatan Goswami giving more detail, a little bit less detail on the position of the followers, some of the followers of Madhva that don't like this chapter and the next two chapters, 12, 13, 14. Doesn't say it specifically, but because it deals with Brahma Vimohat Lila, and they're from Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, they don't like it. They say, you know, as scholars will say, for this reason, that reason, the other reason, scholarly reasons given, they say it's interpolated, so they just reduce the number of chapters of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam by 3. Just stroke of the pen and they eliminate them. They don't comment on them, they don't consider them. So then Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami have kind of, you know, refutation of that idea and give their reasons. That was what we heard yesterday. So here's another very short one. This is from Jiva Goswami's Krama Sandarbha. Krama Sandarbha is a Sandarbha. It's a summary of all 12 cantos. It's not part of the 6 Sandarbhas. It's another one. So he is very simply, these 3 chapters are not accepted by some, but a commentary is written because they are accepted by Vasana Bhasha and many other ancient commentators and are famous in all places. So yesterday we heard lengthy details. Here's similar Jiva Goswami in Priti Sandarbha. Priti Sandarbha is one of the 6, is the final of the 6 Sandarbhas, with emphasis on the final stage, prema or priti. And he writes, the excellence of Krishna's manifested pastimes in Vrindavan are of many types. Now, part of the reason this is appearing here is in chapter 12, it's the beginning is Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Chapter 11 was his childhood pastimes. Now he's in his Kumara age, and he's with his cowherd boys, and this is describing that Vrajadam. So there's descriptions of his form and descriptions of his associates and descriptions of his dham, and this is some of both. Anyway, I'll just carry on. The excellence of Krishna's manifested pastimes in Vrindavan are of many types. Some show excellence in Aishwarya, opulence, such as Krishna showing Lord Brahma that he is Lord of millions of universes and the form of rasa of eternity knowledge and infinite bliss. That's chapter 13. He showed that. Some show compassion, like Krishna's giving Putana the position of a nurse. Some show his sweetness, madhurya, And it gives some examples. From Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 22, when Krishna, this is childhood, little boys, when Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled about zigzag in the muddy places of Vraja, the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people, but when they saw that these were other people, not their parents, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, scurrying. And 29 of the same chapter, your son sometimes comes to our houses before the milking of the cows and releases the calves. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them. And the monkeys, when they have their bellies so full they won't take any more, he breaks the pots. Sometimes he gets no opportunity to steal butter and or milk from a house, so he will become angry at the householders and he would make the small children cry and then run away. Some translations say he pinches them and they cry. This is on the sweetness examples. Chapter 11, which we just finished. Praised by the elderly gopis, the Lord is like a puppet on strings and sometimes danced like other boys. Sometimes he sang and sometimes acted ignorantly. And then this chapter, that's why this reference is here, the first verse of chapter 12. O King, one day Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his horn and woke all the cowherd boys and calves with this beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Vraja to the forest. So this is the introduction to what the forest of Vrindavan is like during this age of Krishna. Very similar passage. That was Priti Sandarbha. Here's the structure of the Sandarbhas. There's six. It's very logical. Tattva Sandarbha establishes the authority for speaking about Krishna as Srimad Bhagavatam, the Pramana section of Tattva Sandarbha. Then in sequence is Paramatma, Bhagavan, then Krishna Sandarbha. First, the feature of the Lord dealing with Prakriti and modes and creation and everything. Then the principle of Bhagavan and then the person, Krishna. So that's four. And those are all in the category of Sambandha. And then comes Abhideya, right? So that's Bhakti Sandarbha. That's number five. And the final one is Priti, Prayojana. So this is from Krishna Sandarbha. And he speaks again about Krishna's excellences and his abode. So the all-auspicious exploits of the all-attractive incarnations of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also the pastimes he performed as a child are described in this Srimad Bhagavatam and in other scriptures. Anyone who clearly chants these descriptions of his pastimes will attain transcendental loving service unto Lord Krishna, who is the goal of all perfect sages. paragraph. Lord Krishna's exalted Vrindavan pastimes are of many kinds. So he repeats what he said in Priti Sandarbha. There are pastimes, for example, where he reveals his power and opulence, Aishwarya, such as the pastime where he shows that many millions of universes are present in his eternal spiritual form, full of knowledge and unlimited bliss. There are also his pastimes of compassion, karunya, such as his pastime of showing compassion to Putana and allowing her to become like his own mother. And then he goes into sweetness, and some of the ones from Priti Sandarbha mentioned, here are some additional ones. Chapter 11, the previous chapter, towards the end of that chapter. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would play on their flutes. Sometimes they would throw ropes and stones devised for getting fruits from the trees. Sometimes they would throw only stones. Sometimes their ankle bells tinkling, they would play football with fruits like bale and amalaki. Sometimes they would cover themselves with blankets and imitate cows and bulls and fight with one another, roaring loudly. And sometimes they would imitate the voices of the animals. In this way, they enjoyed sporting exactly like to ordinary human children. Lord Krishna's sweetness is also seen in these words. This is another translation of this first verse. One day, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. When we finish these, we're going to go to the next verse 2 of this chapter 12. But here's the first verse again. Picnic, pastime. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke up the cowherd boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. Three chapters later, chapter 15. Sometimes the honeybees in Vrindavan became so mad with ecstasy that they closed their eyes and began to sing. Lord Krishna, moving along the forest path with his cowherd boyfriends and Baladev, would then respond to the bees by imitating their singing, while his friends sang about his pastimes. Sometimes Lord Krishna would imitate the chattering of a parrot, sometimes with a sweet voice, the call of a cuckoo, and sometimes the cooing of swans. Sometimes he vigorously imitated the dancing of a peacock, making his cowherd boyfriends laugh. Sometimes with a deep voice, as deep as the rumbling of clouds, he would call out with great affection the names of the animals who had wandered far from the herd, thus enchanting the cows and the cowherd boys. Same chapter, 15. Lord Krishna's hair, powdered with the dust raised by the cows, was decorated with a peacock feather and forest flowers. The Lord glanced charmingly and smiled beautifully, playing upon his flute while his companions chanted his glories. The gopis, all together, came forward to meet him with their eyes very eager to see him. Chapter 18, sweetness again. As Krishna danced, Some of the boys accompanied him by singing, others by playing flutes and hand cymbals and buffalo horns, while still others praised his dancing. His sweetness is shown in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 20, text 26, 10th canto. The cows had to move slowly because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. In chapter 1, another sweetness example, the cowherd girls said, "Oh, friends, those eyes that see the beautiful faces of the sons of Maharaj Nanda are certainly very fortunate. These two sons enter the forest, surrounded by their friends, driving the cows before them. They hold their flute to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision." Some more sweetness examples. Bhagavatam has got lots of sweetness. His complexion was dark blue, and his garment golden. Wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, sprigs of flower buds, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves, he was dressed just like a dramatic actor. He rested one hand on the shoulder of a friend and with the other twirled a lotus. Lilies graced his ears, his hair hung down over his cheeks, and his lotus-like face was smiling. In chapter 29, Sri Badarayani said, that's Shukadev, "Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in all opulences, yet upon seeing those autumn nights scented with jasmine flowers, he turned his mind toward loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potency." And chapter 35, which we just completed in the morning, Krishna's flute. Gopis meditating as Krishna enters the forest. When Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the Siddhas, become amazed. As those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find that their minds, yielding to the pursuit of lustful desires and their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. What more can be said? Krishna Sandarbha, who in their hearts love the Lord, devotees who in their hearts love the Lord will easily understand all these descriptions. Here's a quote from Sanatan Goswami from Brihat Bhagavatamrita on the same pastime. "To have lunch there on the broad attractive bank of the Yamuna, Krishna seated his elder brother in the middle of the cowherd boys who sat around them in concentric circles." And the commentary reads, "Earlier the boys had all their breakfast, but now it was time for lunch. We can understand from descriptions in the 10th canto that they ate breakfast sometimes in the forest and sometimes at home. For example, in chapter 11, the translation reads, "After Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning, they went to take care of the calves." That was the standard, actually. This particular day was an exception. There was a reason. Krishna had some pastime planned. So after breakfast, they went to take care of the calves and wandered here and there. Krishna and Balaram, the supreme personalities of Godhead, who maintain the entire creation, now took charge of the calves as if cowherd boys. But sometimes they had breakfast in the forest, like this verse, chapter 12, text 1. One day, O King, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke all the cowherd boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. So now we're going to go to verse number 2 of chapter 12. It's all very sublime. At that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi and joined Krishna, keeping before them hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. The boys were very beautiful, and they were equipped with lunch bags, bugles, flutes, and sticks for controlling the calves. Now it gets into how many, the numbers, the numbering system. Prituka refers to the cowherd boys. They were holding slings, sticks, horns, and flutes. Sahasra Padi Sankhya means 10,000. Krishna had Asankhya calves. Asankhya is 1 followed by 17 zeros. That's a big number. One should not say, however, that so many cows cannot fit in the 16 krosha area of Vrindavan. We heard the area of Vrindavan from chapter 11 because they shifted from Gokul to Vrindavan. They crossed the river Jamuna and settled. So there it says what the size of that settlement was. And it gives the number 16 kroshas. So 16 kroshas, one krosha is approximately 2 miles. So that's one dimension, then there's another dimension. It's a big space. But still, how can you fit Asankhya calves, that's 1 plus 17 zeros inside that space? And the answer? Because by the inconceivable energy of the Lord, the Dham is unlimited. In one portion of the Dham, the billions of universes measuring 50 kotis, and then a koti is 10 million, we hear that shortly, 10 million, and there's 50 of those, yojanas, fits. And so yojana is 8 miles, 50 million miles times 8, all fit into Vrindavan. The 16 miles. Krishna showed this to Brahma in a later chapter. It is said in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that because of the Lord, his associates in the Dham, they all have inconceivable power, thus there's no obstacles. So while there's dimensions, one can understand that's the perceivable part, and then it's actually unlimited. That's the message. Jiva Goswami goes a little more into detail. All the boys came out with great speed. And because what was said, the commentary from yesterday, normally his mother comes and wakes him up. But this particular morning he had a plan, so he woke up before she woke him up. And he woke them up with his horn. And they were really, it was really sweet, and they all woke up, and off they go, because it was pre-planned the day before, have your picnic lunches ready, because their mothers, who knows, weren't even up yet, off they go. All the boys came out with great speed and simultaneously, in order to associate with him, since they had great affection for him, they were in the thousands. Then he gives numbers. A thousand is 10 hundreds. And ayutam is 10,000. And laksha, or a lakh, is 100,000, that we all know. Niyutam is 1,000,000, and koti is 10,000,000. And nyar buddha is 100,000,000. Paragraph. They were in the 10,000s. That's the boys. The boys and the calves together could not be counted. That's asankhya. 1 plus 17 zeros. If the number of calves that they herded in the forest was beyond calculation, how many more calves must have been left back in Braja? The small calves taking milk from their mothers, as well as the mothers of the calves that went to the forest. Other cows, the elder male and female calves, the bulls, whose numbers kept increasing daily by the power of Gopal, and the buffaloes as well. Thus, the animals, cowherd and cowherd women, were unlimited in number. And he quotes this particular verse, rasa dhyanam paramada shata koti bir, there's this word koti, akulitaha. 1,000,000,000 gopis gathered at the place of the rasa dance. That's a lot. That's a big rasa dance. 1,000,000,000 gopis. I mean, you know, think of a football game and how many people attend a football game. You know, it depends. The stadium and the event and things. But, you know, so many, 80,000, 100,000. Where do they have the rasa dance? But it expanded. That's the idea. That we heard from chapter 11, this is the beginning of chapter 12, they're doing it again, Acharyas. While there's these dimensions and the numbers seem fantastic, how did it work? Because it's actually unlimited. We have some picture, but it's unlimited. We'll circle back, because it's almost done. Such places exist by the inconceivable power of the Lord. The boys were joyful because Krishna had personally awakened them. They departed in a special manner, vi niryayu. Now, elsewhere that vi niryayu is without Balaram. Balaram's not going to be present for this pastime of the killing of Agasura. But we find out in chapter 13 why. Balaram was covered by Krishna's yoga maya potency, so he wouldn't get it until chapter 13. Until 1 year had passed. Because during that 1 year, Krishna was all the cowherd boys. and all the calves. And Balaram didn't spoil the pastime. But when chapter 13 begins to be narrated, slowly the curtain of Yogamaya is withdrawn, and slowly he starts to understand, and then he just smiles at his wonderful Krishna. So how do we understand these things? I mean, one of the from Sataputta, I learned a number of things. You know Sataputta? You don't know Sataputta? Richard Thompson? Mysteries of the Sacred Universe? Vedic cosmology and cosmography? Mechanistic and non-mechanistic science? Prabhupada's disciple, who was a PhD in mathematics, and Prabhupada explicitly gave him the assignment of making a model for the temple of Vedic planetarium, Sataputta. And just in my lifetime, the person who I've had personal association with, who comes the closest to fitting the description of a genius, is Sataputta. And his approach, because he was a mathematician, was math. And one of the things that fascinated him, there's many things that he would speak about, is these things with numbers. Like, I forget, so many quadrillion bodyguards were the number of bodyguards of King Ugrasena. And where'd they all fit? I mean, what he did was, he said, he did a calculation of the surface of the earth if you paved over all the oceans. There's so many square feet. And if you have somebody standing in those many square feet, you couldn't fit in the whole surface of the earth paved over. For the distance you need just to stand together with people. He's a mathematician. And wouldn't fit. What to speak of all those bodyguards fitting in Dwarka? So how did it work? I'll give you some other examples. There's another example where it's described that Krishna called Lord Brahma to see him in Dwarka. You know this pastime. So Brahma came. He went, "Oh, Krishna's calling me." So he came, and there was a gate attendant, a guard, and he said, "I've come to see Krishna." He called me. He said, "Well, you please wait here. I'll make sure Krishna is ready to receive you." So the guard came back, secretary or whatever, saying, "Krishna wants to know which Lord Brahma." You heard this? Yes. Okay. Which Lord Brahma? He said, "What do you mean, which Lord Brahma? You know, the father of the four Kumaras, the creator of this universe." Okay, wait here, I'll come back. So when he comes back, he said, "Krishna said you can come." So he went before Krishna, and he could see what others could not see. There, all the Brahmas from all the universes also came. He had four heads, some had 10 heads, 100 heads, 1,000 heads. And they all simultaneously, with their many, 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 many heads, imagine being an artist having to depict this one, they placed their helmets at his feet. Besides how he depict all those many heads, but this is Sataputta now, how did they all fit at the feet of Krishna? Made a big clamor because they're metal helmets, golden helmets. And other things that are mathematically like, that it doesn't work with three-dimensional space, as was his point. And then, you know, the universal form, or the fifth canto, description of Mount Sumeru. Without going into the, he shares It doesn't work with three-dimensional space. We have to think of these pastimes beyond three-dimensional space. You know, yogis that can enter into one sacred river and instantly emerge in another place far, far away. It's known that people can do that. So how to do that? You can't, you know, it would take time, what to speak of distance. So this, it's they have access to higher dimensional space. They have powers and the kind of consciousness that permits that. So, in short, the abode of Krishna is, looks like this, or the form of Krishna looks like this. But the form of Krishna is unlimited, the abode of Krishna is unlimited. And the associates of Krishna, by his arrangements, can be also unlimited. We were hearing this in terms of Krishna's giving deliverance, liberation, or residence in his own abode to so many associates and even to demons killed by him. And not only he did, but some of his associates. Some of his associates gave that benediction to others. There was a discussion on there was a discussion from yesterday evening on the objection that the Madhvas have, some of the Madhvas have, saying that these examples of Putana getting not just liberation, but a spiritual identity in the spiritual realm. It's just like, we can't accept it. We can't accept it. And Jiva Goswami's explanation is, it's meant to give glorification to Mother Jashoda. Because if Putana, the Lord can give liberation to whoever he likes, and even the small amount of service that she rendered by offering her breast milk to Krishna, that motherly gesture was accepted by Krishna, and he gave her the position of mother, the associate of Mother Jashoda. And then the inference is, then what to speak of Mother Jashoda? And that's something that Brahma says in chapter 14, which some Madhvas don't like. Saying, you've been so merciful, because he says, you've been so merciful that you gave Putana and Putana's two brothers, liberation. How are you going to reciprocate with the love of the residents of Vrindavan who have given you everything? They got special mercy because of Putana. Putana got special mercy because of a little service. So Krishna gave mercy to them. Krishna gave mercy to them because of the mercy that he gave to their sister, the little bit of service that they did. So Krishna entered into the mouth of Agasura, and Krishna entered into the mouth of Bakasura, and by Krishna's placing his foot, by Krishna placing his foot in the mouth of Agasura, Agasura became free from sinful reaction. You with me? And his placing himself in the mouth of Bakasura, he freed him from sinful reaction. And he got liberation because of the little bit of service that Putana did. So then the Jiva Goswami is explaining, this is giving glory by both Lord Brahma and then later by Uddhava to how merciful is Krishna. This is this karunya feature. And similarly, how outstanding is the sweetness feature and the aishvarya feature. The unlimitedness of Krishna is demonstrated in his pastimes, and the conclusion here is only devotees can really understand this. And to what degree can we understand it? It's so high. But those that aren't devotees, because it's so high they can't understand it, they just dismiss it. Including these things with numbers. How many calves? How many cowherd boys? And in the Rasa dance, how many personal bodyguards of King Ugrasena? It's like too fantastic. But in the beginning of Bhagavat Sandarbha, something I like a lot, because Bhagavat Sandarbha is dealing with the feature of Bhagavan, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabyate. So the feature of Bhagavan means he has all opulences. Okay. Equipment is great when it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. So, Bhagavan means one who has all opulences in full. So here's Jiva Goswami's very simple statement.
Low battery?
We're okay. We're back on again. Okay. Okay. We're back on again. Bhagavan means he who has all opulences in full. So Jiva Goswami's reasoning goes, in order to understand preliminarily, in order to understand God, Bhagavan, one must accept that he has potencies that are unlimited and innumerable. And once one accepts he has potencies that are unlimited and innumerable, then you have access to understanding him. Conversely, if you don't accept that God has powers that are unlimited and innumerable, you have no way of understanding God. So once you've accepted that his potencies are unlimited and innumerable, then all of these things are not a problem. Devotees can understand. Those that are devoted to Bhagavan, they just go, wow, Krishna's cool. He's unlimited. His name, similarly. For us, it's even, you know, the beginning is Nam Namakari Bahoda Nija Sarva Shaktis. Nija Sarva Shaktis. In each of his names, all of his transcendental potencies are there, just in each and every name, and so many names. Bahuda. So many names. So we can realize Bhagavan to some extent, as our consciousness becomes cleansed by the sound vibration of his name, his form, his entourage, his abode, which is what we're doing. It's very mind-expanding and purifying. I mean, it lifts consciousness and it frees the mind from material conceptions, because material conceptions say, not possible. Not possible. How can these many calves fit into this much space? Nice story. It's good for kids. But it's not something I can take seriously. I met somebody recently kind of like that. I mean, a strong science background, and his wife was very devotional. And they didn't see alike when it comes to seeing Krishna. So, you know, the discussion was very polite. But, you know, it wasn't like there was some visible tension in the household. But, you know, it's hard for him to go in the same way that his wife goes because he has this, you know, really strong scientific training, and hearing pastimes, it's not sweetness, it's, huh? So, we had some nice discussion on that topic, but I'm just sharing it in this group a little differently. It's quite simple if one has this fundamental principle in place. Bhagavan means, the Bhagavan conception means, Parashramuni says in Vishnu Purana, it means he has all opulences in full. He's not just wealthy. He has all wealth. Our wealth is his wealth. Anyone that's super, you know, super wealthy, they're not as wealthy as Krishna. He has all wealth, including theirs, etc. All beauty, all fame, all knowledge, all strength, all renunciation. All potencies. Nityasarva shaktis. Parashya shakti vivadaiva shruyate swabhaviki gyana balakriyacha. Prabhupada would like to refer to that verse from the Shruti mantras. He can do anything. And anything related to him can do anything. So what then, the pastimes are simply displays of his ability to do anything with anybody that can do anything, and it's exchanges of rasa. And then, so then what's rasa? And there's all those definitions of what rasa is. But it's the soul to the supreme soul, and they're exchanges of loving dealings with one another, with Krishna at the center, because he's the source. Those who are emanations from him may have special potencies, but it's minuscule compared to his potencies, the all-potent source. And then there's loving exchanges. And there's different levels of consciousness, so there's different levels of exchanges. And there's the residents of Vrindavan have not only the highest level of consciousness, but the greatest degree of intensity of love, therefore the madhurya feature is strongest, and therefore the attractiveness of the sweet features of Krishna's pastimes in Braja are super excellent. But one can't understand them if one hasn't understood Krishna in the other levels, therefore the first 9 cantos before it comes to the 10th canto. And then even in the 10th canto, he leaves Braja and goes to Mathura, and his feelings while in Mathura for the residents of Vrindavan. He goes to Dwaraka, his feeling for the residents of Braja while in Dwaraka. He performs his Dwaraka Leela because there's other living entities that don't have that same intimacy, intensity of love. But they have love. They're pure. So it's a different kind of love. And he reciprocates with everyone. Say it negatively. There isn't someone that Krishna doesn't reciprocate with, including us. We're little specks. But there's a reciprocation of love. So the encouragement for sadhana bhakti is that we engage in the activities of serving, so it makes us more eligible for those loving exchanges that's completely natural to us. And meanwhile, to help us develop our innate affinity for the object of love is by hearing the nature of the person who is so lovable. So we hear his pastimes. And there's potencies within those pastimes that awaken the natural love that is inside each soul, each of us. That's our sadhana bhakti process, leading to purification. we read once, the concluding of the previous chapter goes like this: one who hears these pastimes can free themselves, hears, chants, remembers, can free themselves from all types of sins. And that's just the negative side. Then the positive side is awaken our natural attraction. Somehow or other, the teaching of bhakti is to mold your life in such a way you will always remember Krishna. And, oh, by the way, don't forget Krishna. Always remember Krishna. Yena tena pakarena mana krishne navesayat. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That's the principle that all other teachings of bhakti are the kinkaras, the servants of. Just this one thing. And that's our natural condition. And the means for that natural condition to be restored, for health to be restored, and the diseased condition to be dismissed, the medicine, is taken through the ear. It's this sound vibration, the name, form, qualities, pastimes, abode. You know, how many calves? How many cowherd boys? And Krishna woke them all up just by blowing out his horn. And it was like pre-planned. Have your lunches ready. We're going to have a picnic today. I mean, tomorrow. Ooh, let's go. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had two questions, Maharaj. These mysteries of the Vrindavan Dham, in terms of the various aspects of it, my question is, when this material world, this universe goes into Mahavishnu's body when he inhales, do these dhams related to the Lord's pastimes, do they exist within the, still in the material world?
Or? No. They exist in the spiritual world then and now. Their existence is not dependent upon the manifestation or withdrawal of the manifestation of the universe. They're eternal. Literally. There's manifest and unmanifest stages of Krishna's eternal pastimes, but the pastimes and the dhams and the devotees and everything, they're eternal.
And my second question is, Maharaj, you mentioned briefly about the six sandarbhas, and as you are describing the different qualities of Krishna, especially sweetness, compassion, I was curious on if these six sandarbhas, do they touch on...
If which?
If the six sandarbhas, do they touch on particular qualities of Krishna?
Of course, it touches on the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which touches on the qualities of Krishna. So we just read from two of the six sandarbhas. There's this, that, the other quality. Here's some examples from the Bhagavatam that expose or reveal these qualities. He's just pointing it out. It's there. It's there in the sandarbhas because it's there in the Bhagavatam. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Very nice class. Maharaj, I have a question, like, how do we identify the reciprocations?
How? From
how
the heart?
How do we?
At the heart level.
Some of the examples, Maharaj, would like. I mean, sometimes I get confused. It's my thinking.
Sure.
Like, is it my mind's vice or is it reciprocation? How do we?
I see your question. Well, we, even at the heart level, we're required to verify with scripture. Because the very reason that you just mentioned, because the mind can easily trick us. We can imagine something, or it's coming in on the platform of the mind, it's not on the platform of the soul. It's not a per se a reciprocation of Krishna. It's the mind doing what the mind does. So we verify through scripture. You know, here's an example that comes to mind from the scripture, from the Bhagavatam. Okay, this hasn't been happening until this evening, so we'll just put up with it. Bhakti parashano bhavo viraktir anyatra cha. You're familiar with that verse? It's a verse that says, the second half of the verse says, it's a comparison. Just like when you've been fasting and you break the fast, three things happen predictably. That is, strength comes back to the body, the hunger subsides, and at a certain point you're feeling satisfied. Similarly, bhakti has the following symptoms. The process of hearing has the following symptoms. The desire to be in service to Krishna awakens. Paraisha anubhav, the feelings for the object, Krishna, awaken. I want to serve. I feel some attraction for Krishna. And viraktir anyatra, one loses attraction for other things. Those are symptoms. Predictable, just like eating after fasting is predictable. Someone doesn't have to tell you, you're getting strength back in your body, repeat after me. You've eaten enough, you can't eat any more, repeat after me. No, you can tell them, I've eaten enough, thank you. So it's something that one can experience, but the experience needs to be verified through the lens of scripture, Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's our standard, the gold standard. So we can experience something that says, I want to do some service. I have some feelings for the object of my deity or the name or the Bhagavatam or something. And then detachment from other things. Then it's not just the mind when through the lens of scripture, then it's real reciprocation. It's subjective, but it's also, there's some standard to evaluate by.
You mentioned about the inconceivable pastimes, like in small place, these many bodyguards, how can they fit?
Yeah.
So sometimes if we get that kind of question from audience, how do we deal with those situations? I mean, they try to imagine based on the intelligence level, but how
it's completely natural. We should not be surprised or disturbed or feel, hey, you're being offensive, what are you doing? It's completely natural. They don't say it, they're just not saying it. But they're thinking it. So it's better that they say it. It's good that they say it. So how do we process it? There's different ways depending upon the person. You take something that's from what they know and help them understand that which they think they know, and it has its inconceivableness to it. Or you can tell a story. I mean, one of the, it depends on the person. There's this nice story, the Brahmin and the cobbler. And Narada was going to see Lord Vishnu, and the cobbler said, please ask Lord Vishnu, when will I be delivered? The Brahmin asked the same question. You know that story. So, and you know, what do I tell them? When I said, tell them when you saw me, you're threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. So that story. So the one who has faith gets mercy, and the one that is faithless, although they may have academic and other qualification. So faith is, an element of faith is essential, but we have to have faith in something. We don't exist. This goes back to Bhagavad Gita, divisions of faith. You have to have faith in something. And if you don't have faith in the personality of Godhead, you gotta have faith in something according to the modes of nature. So my dear friend, you have faith in your senses. And the senses and the reasoning faculties interpreting sensory data called science. It relies on these two things. That's the process. So then you can describe the scientific process and you have faith in it, but the bucket has holes in it. And you can go through, so, and here's another kind of faith. And so I see that bucket has holes in it. I choose to place my faith over here. And you know what? The things that I can practically experience, it holds water. The bucket doesn't have holes in it. You gotta have faith in something. And I'm using my senses, I'm using my mind, I'm using my reasoning faculties. And my reasoning faculty says, that's guaranteed to not hold water. I use it. I mean, look at, we're using microphones and computers and we use it, but that's not the bottom line. Let's look at the scientific process and how much has the scientific process morphed over a period of time? So if you get an understanding, it depends on the person. If you get an understanding of how truth is explored through the scientific process and it keeps changing because the axioms keep changing because of new sensory data and new ways of interpreting the sensory data. Science keeps changing. They say it's evolving. We're getting closer. We say the very process itself is fallible. You're never going to get there. Never going to get there to truth. It may get closer. When there's not like we just trash, but it's just not it's not what we rely on. So what are you going to rely on? This depends on the person. Goes back to Tattva Sandarbha. I invite you to read, or I'm giving seminar on Tattva Sandarbha, but it's Pramana Kanda. How do you know anything? So Shabda Pramana is the best. And then of Shabda Pramana, there's the best. A Parusheya Shabda, to understand transcendence. How are you going to know about transcendence with your senses and mind? Not possible. So again, how you respond depends upon the person. Some persons just really they're like a rock. The water is not going to go anywhere. It's going to roll off the rock. So give them prasadam.
Thank you.
Depends. It depends. There are ways to help those people too. One of the best ways to help those people is your good qualities. Because they can see, here's a good person. And they'll test you sometimes. You know, knowingly or unknowingly. They'll say something and do something that's harsh and see how you're going to respond. And you don't respond, you know, in retaliation. I had one of those exchanges just last week. It was, you know, like somebody was really down. really down, down and dirty. I mean, like, their language was really... But they were suffering, and I didn't respond. I just, you know, it was like... Whew. So the behavior wasn't okay, but here's the soul. So, but I just maintained that posture, and they became soft. And they apologized for their harshness and crude language and things. It wasn't towards me, it was just about circumstances of life. And so that's an approach. Just be a good model of Vaishnava qualities. It's heart melting. And some persons, it takes it some time.
So Maharaj, like one basic question, like what is Brihad Bhagavatam? Like I have heard about Srimad Bhagavatam, but I feel like it's a different, right? Brihad Bhagavatam. Can I know a little glories of like who wrote it and?
Sure, sure. There's Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not Bhagavatam, it's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Bhagavat Amrita, Amrita, the nectar of Bhagavan. Brihat means big. Lagu means light. Like Prabhupada said, mridanga can be heard for a couple of blocks. Brihat mridanga can be heard around the world. That's the printing press. In Bhaktisiddhanta's logo, one of the items in his logo is a printing press. Because at that time, offset printing was just coming in, and that was part of the logo of Gaudiya Math. That was the Brihat Mridanga. So Brihat Bhagavat Amrita is written by Sanatan Goswami describing one way to say what it is. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. There's another thing that you can find when you read the earlier sections of Brihat Bhagavatamrita is it's a kila, K-H-I-L-A, or supplement to Jaimini Rishi's Mahabharat. There's Valmiki's Mahabharat. And Jaimini Rishi, you read in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, was narrating his Mahabharat to Janamejaya, the son of Maharishi Parikshit, right? And he went, wow, that was really good. I'd never heard of Mahabharat like that. You have a supplement to that? He said, sure. And then he narrated Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And Sanatan Goswami scribed it and wrote a commentary on it. So it's Sanatan Goswami's writing. So you can say different things about what it is, because that was your question. It's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, commonly. And his brother, Rupa Goswami, wrote Lagu, light, Bhagavatamrita, which is a commentary on one section of Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnations of the Lord. It's a very comprehensive, detailed description of avatars. And using different references and covering it in different ways. Fascinating. Bhagavat Amrita. Logo Bhagavat Amrita. Okay?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, as you mentioned, we should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So, can you help us understanding How can we do that?
How can we do that?
Yes.
Very simple. Become attached to something and you'll think of that something. A miser thinks about money, 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 money. They're attached to money, so they think about money when they, you know, 24 hours, literally. An athlete, they're attached to their sport and, you know, getting the gold medal or winning the whatever it is, championship or something. And everything, their whole life is focused on that one something because they're attached to it. Or a mother is attached to her child. Or we're all attached to something. And that which you are attached to, that's where the mind goes. So how to is your question, and it's to become attached to. Maya Sakta Manak Partam, chapter 7, text 1 of Bhagavad Gita. Asakti, it means attachment. Maya Asakti Mana, with mind attached to me. So how do you become attached to Krishna? How do you have your mind always go to Krishna? By becoming attached to Krishna. How do you become attached to Krishna? Well, it's two-step. Just like this example of by hearing, the desire to do some service awakens. It's there because we're serving something. So the service to Krishna comes from hearing about Krishna. And then some affinity, some feeling for Krishna. So, and detachment from other things. So detachment from our attachments to other things doesn't mean you trash them. Just the attachment to being the enjoyer. Just at the very beginning of this discussion, Putana, the first demon that was killed, and Tataka was the first demoness that was killed by Ram. Why woman? Asha, the desire, asha, to be an enjoyer of material objects. That's what we're attached to, the notion of being enjoyers of the temporary. With that, we're not going to remember anything other than the temporary and being the enjoyers of it. So how does that spirit change? By awakening the bhakti spirit. And how does the bhakti spirit change? By hearing. That's the primary, you know, sound vibration, and hearing spiritual sound vibration is the primary thing. And then after you hear, well, you got to do something with it. You'll live by it, at least those things that went in. Yeah, that makes sense. Then you do that. And then some taste and some detachment. It takes some time because we're really attached to the temporary. Not just to the temporary, but being the enjoyers of. Have a house. And let the house be a place where Krishna's service is what we do here. That's the function of the house. And if that function is missing, then it's going to be attachment in the other way. There's nothing wrong with the house or the chair or the microphone, or even when it squeals like that. It's, you know, you use it in Krishna's service. And then there's that, the attachment isn't to the object and the enjoyer of the object. So how to get the mind attached? Hearing. Detachment from the enjoyment of the temporary, it can stay around, fine. But for the purpose of the pleasure of Krishna, that's the bhakti principle, for the pleasure of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, for the pleasure of Krishna. And then there's attachment to the object, and that the mind goes there. Naturally. Naturally.
But Maharaj, like, sometimes I struggle, like I felt, like as you said, if athletic or miser has, they think about money or their sport, but like I felt they have some love for it, right? Like the miser had love for money. That's why he think love, like money. And the athlete has love for sport. Like he loves sport, right?
That's right.
So when I hear or when like it's my personal thing, like when we hear and when I do service, I don't know, like I perform service, but I struggle that I don't feel love in that. Like I am doing for some, I don't know what reason is that, but I want to awaken that love. So how to awaken that love for it? As you said, attachment for it.
Same answer, same question, same answer. Through sound. You know, we're in a diseased condition. In that diseased condition, we don't have transcendental feelings. We have the other kind of feelings. Like, he or she said something mean and I'm like, you know, we have those feelings. He came at the wrong time. So, feelings for attachment in the diseased condition, that's perfectly natural because it's the diseased condition. And the feelings that are there in the purified condition, that's more natural than the diseased condition. So when you're diseased, you have to take medicine. You have to get the right diagnosis. You have to have a good doctor to get the diagnosis. And then the medicine. And then the proper diet. So the medicine is the sound is taken through the ear. Bhavo shadat shrota. Bhava. It means material misery. Oshada, it's misery that's relieved by medicine through the ear and goes to the heart and it cleanses the heart. And so diseases may take some time to cure, but that's the medicine. The diet is prasadam, literally, and the good physician is the acharya teaching us, here's what the medical books say, the spiritual medical books say. Here's the disease. Here's the medicine, here's the cure, please follow it. And then you have to, so, faithfully hear what the physician says, and you follow the prescription. And it takes some time. You know, it can be quicker or shorter for different factors. In one's previous life, one may have gone further. In one's previous life, one may not have gone so far. So in this life, it may be more of a struggle for me than for the person next to me, because like they're flying, and I'm still struggling. But it has to do with, you know, my past activities and why I am where I am today, consciousness wise. But it doesn't change the prescription and the medicine, and the diet. The purpose behind, this is sankalpa, very important, is the intention with which, because it seems like embedded in your question, we're servants by not just you, all souls, according to scripture, we're servants. Jivir Swarupaya, Nityara Krishna Das, that's who we are. We're meant for service to Krishna. That's who we are. So we're serving something. Serving our boss, serving our children, serving our dog, serving something. So we're serving. Serving our senses, because we're servants. So now back to your question. Doing service, you want to feel the sense of doing it with love. And that sense of doing it with love isn't there. So what do I need to do? Am I doing something wrong? Not necessarily. Just be clear. Stay with the intention. And so it, because intention helps the effectiveness of the medicine. I'll give you a little example.
Yeah, sure.
it's really easy. Some time ago, I had a knee problem. And, you know, I could barely walk without this detail. So I went to, I had some tests done, and I thought I was going to need surgery. And the surgeon tried this and that, looked at the MRIs and said, you don't need surgery. And he went, wow. He said, look, I'm a surgeon. I could do surgery. But what I see is something is torn. Meniscus, it's just the cartilage that, you know, that this bone and that bone are held together by meniscus. It's torn, but it's not torn in a way that it's interfering with the movement. You just got to do physical therapy. I can go in there and clean it up, but it's not interfering anyways, clean it up or don't clean it up, so you don't need surgery. So, okay, physical therapy. So, you know, prescription, go to a physical therapist, try this and that. I could barely move my knee. Okay, now it's got a picture of what's going on. I saw the MRI and the doctor's recommendation. So tell me, this is a sankalpa question. She didn't say sankalpa. She said, so what is it you'd like on the other end of this? And I said, this is a sankalpa question. I said, I want to be able to go up and down the stairs like a normal person, not like an old man. Cause I, you know, cause like, it'd take half an hour to walk up a set of stairs. It was like really yucky. She said, okay, good. Wrote it down. What else? And said, I don't know. So she was persistent. She said, well, you want to get back out and start playing tennis again? And I said, I haven't played tennis in a while, but I can understand you want me to take this seriously. And so, let me think about it. Next time we got there, so I said, I have an answer for you. She said, what's that? I said, I'm going to India. She said, oh, I have a friend going to India. Tell me where you're going. No, she had social skills. So I said, I'm going to a place where, outside of Delhi called Vrindavan. She said, oh, she's going to Delhi too. What's the place? What's the place again? Vrindavan. She's writing it down. I said, there's a very celebrated hill there, and I want to be able to walk all the way around that hill, because it's like, you know, a spiritual place, because I was, you know, Dodi. And it's sacred, and I want to be able to not just, you know, ride in a car and go around. I want to walk the whole distance. She said, really good. Thank you. So then I'm doing the, you know, the physical therapy, 15 of those and 20 of those and so many times a day. And just doing the numbers is really boring. But when I was thinking, I want to walk around Govardhan Hill, it had a different effect. I could feel it. Same thing. But the sankalpa made all the difference energetically in the healing process. I learned something from that one. So what do you want? Like, you know, ask a teenager. Or ask an adult. Ask you. Ask yourself. What do I really want? What's really important to me? And it's not just, you know, check the right box and get an A in your exam and you get a certificate for giving the right answer. It's what do you really want? And commonly, our spiritual desire is not so high. It's there, but it's mixed with so many other things. But sadhana starts somewhere, some preliminary faith, adau shraddha. And then comes the next thing. This is Rupa Goswami, sadhu sangha. And then comes the next thing. You do, when, with sadhu sangha, what do? You do what sadhus do. It's bhajana kriya. So you do your bhajana kriya with some purpose. Ah, that's the sankalpa. What is it you want? I want to have feelings for Krishna. Stay with it. Do your 15 of those and 30 of those. Do your, you know, the vintis of sadhana bhakti. Do your cooking in the kitchen. The meditation. I want to do this. I'm already doing it for my family. Let me do it for Krishna. Or find something in the course of the day that you can just like, I'm really focused. I'm going to do this for Krishna. And you exercise that muscle, the bhakti muscle. And it starts to develop. Then it starts to go into other things. It's, you know, physical therapy takes a while and spiritual therapy takes a while too. Sadhana bhakti takes a while. But it's effective. Especially, back to your question, can I get to that place where I have some feelings? When you're clear that what you want, and it's not soft and mushy, it's, you know, even if it's just a seed, but something that's genuine, deep inside, and it starts to grow. You water it, and that seed starts to grow and grow. And then it goes some ups and downs, because that's part of unsteady bhakti. Anishtita bhakti has its ups and downs. It's all described, you know, by our acharyas. There's 6 different unsteadinesses and subcategories of those. So, you know, you have good company. Everyone else has gone down the bhakti path ahead of you. And all the road signs are there. You know, watch out for the ditch and look out for the snake over there. And there's a, you know, barking dog. Watch out. So we know what the path, and we know what the dangers are. And we just keep going. Mindful. With, you know, maya sakta mana. That first verse of chapter 7, Krishna makes a vow. He says, I'm going to explain to you how to, which is your question. How to, maya sakta mana. Yogam yunjan, practicing yoga, yogam yunjan, madashraya, with shelter in me. So read Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, and actually those middle 6 chapters are all on that topic of the answer to the how-to question. He fulfills his promise. And then your first reading will tell you less, then your second reading will tell you more, and your third reading will tell you more. It, you know, more becomes revealed as your consciousness becomes elevated. You'll have those feelings more. As your consciousness becomes elevated, you'll have a clearer sense of the goal than you do today. Because now there's a lot of mix going on, and distraction, and conditioning. And Krishna's got his eye on you. Okay. So anything online? Yeah. Do we have online questions?
We've got one question.
Okay. Because this is a different time, I think we lost some people.
This is from Krishnapada Prabhu. Why did Madhva followers not accept Putanavad Leela? Please elaborate. I did not understand this part of the lecture.
If you, the detail you can listen to yesterday evening's recording, but I'll touch on it with the encouragement you listened to yesterday evening's recording. Because the detail's there. There's what Jiva Goswami explains and Sanatana Goswami explains is that Madhva's view liberation as a goal to be sought after. And they feel they perceive some discomfort that someone as wicked as Putana achieved liberation. Not just liberation. She achieved a position in Krishna Loka as Mother Jasoda's assistant. So they feel there must be some interpolation here. And the other sections that discuss it, there must be some interpolation because the outcome is too high for someone that's so sinful. And a verse, not just, you know, a non-devotee, a verse to Krishna, big time. I mean, her thing was sucking the blood of little children. She wasn't a nice lady. She was really skilled at it. That's why she was sent, the first one. She was a child eater, not just a child molester. She was a really bad person. And very powerful and could change shapes and this and that. And she had, you know, she had mystic powers. So how could somebody like that get liberation? So that's their concern. Because that's the goal. That was what we heard. No, you can go, there's other details, you can go back and listen to the recording. And if you don't know how to get the recording, ask somebody. You'll send, okay.
This question is from Lingaraju Prabhu. When we start an activity with right intention, there could be some byproducts that come. How do I not get carried away by them and stay focused?
Nice question. Your question is directly discussed in Canto 1, Chapter 2, where Sutta Goswami is giving instructions in bhakti. Dharmasya hi apavargyasya narto tayopakalpate. One should not, it's two parts in the commentary I'll touch on. One should not take up dharma with the purpose of material elevation. One should take up dharma with only for the purpose of ultimate salvation. And, now the second part is what you said, there may be some material benefit that comes to you when you're engaged in dharma. Never take that for material enjoyment. Engage that in service to Krishna. Now, in the covered state or materially contaminated state, when something good comes your way, the tendency is to be the enjoyer of that. That's our primary material disease, to be the enjoyer of things. And here comes something. And I didn't try to go for it, but it just came. Here comes some praise. Here comes some recognition. Here comes a little success. Let me be the enjoyer of it. So, the warning is don't take that in and let it stick to you as an enjoyer, but you offer that one way or another, you offer that to Krishna in his service. That's the caution. Like, let's just say, you know, a lot of the modern cars today, if you don't put on your seatbelt, it makes that bing, 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 bing. Bing, bing, bing. Put on your seatbelt. Bing, 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 bing. And it keeps doing it until you put your seatbelt on. That's a warning signal. Put on your seatbelt. Now, you put on your seatbelt, doesn't guarantee you're not going to get in an accident. But you're more protected if you have your seatbelt on than if you don't. Put your seatbelt on. Be cautious. Now back to Lingaraju's question. Be cautious when you're doing something and a secondary unintended thing may come its way to you and, you know, hey, I created the thing. I meant to be the enjoyer of the thing and you try to be the enjoyer of the thing. Bing, 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 bing. Beware. Don't do that. Now, it doesn't guarantee you won't do it. But you're being cautious, knowing that such things can happen. And I want to keep my focus on staying in my lane, driving at the right speed, defensive driving, you know, looking at my, so I'm going to be cautious about my driving, skill. I'm going to stay focused on the bhakti path and not get distracted by these other things. In the conditioned state, the tendency is to be distracted by other things. But let me stay focused on what I'm doing, bhakti, and be on the caution side about the other things. It's not a guarantee, but it's protection. And Krishna will help you. If he sees you're trying like that, Krishna will help you. May Krishna help you. Anything else? Were the kids having a good time upstairs? Yeah.
You mentioned that hearing these pastimes have that potency to destroy the sin or many sinful reactions. So does that also simultaneously give bhakti or yes. the destruction of sins automatically?
It does two things. It does three things. But it does also. The attraction for being in service to Krishna awakens as the sinful reactions are washed, both. Okay? Anything from you? You're writing lots of notes.
No.
Anything further from you?
No.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai. Okay.